Welcome to Alasaha. My name is Dominique Morales. It's the curious home for the good troublemakers, the world changers, and the dream chasers. And for 2023, we are embarking on a very, very special series with the Caribbean Youth Environment Network called In Betweenity, the Green Pod, made possible through the generous partnership with the Clara Lionel Foundation. In this episode, we'll be talking about energy. Where does it come from? How much we use, and what is the region doing to achieve this electric goal of the green transition ambition? In part one of our episode, we outlined the practicality of the green energy transition, cited some projects in the region that can be scaled up, listened to some data, and we promised to have a discussion with our experts. And I am so honored to have been joined by one of the region's best. Here's our discussion. All right, so we can start. So we are here with Miss Kristen Marin. She's of course, well, from Belize, but she also works within the climate space as one of those experts and professionals working intimately with, you know, with it, well, in Global North, really. But I know she has her heart in this side of the world and wants to see us do well. So welcome, Kristen.
Thanks for having me, Dominique. Really looking forward to the conversation.
Of course, of course. So in part one of this episode of this series, we spoke about, you know, whether or not renewable energy is a pie in the sky, whether or not we've been dreaming too big. Why is this transition, and I know it sounds like a very obvious question, but why is this renewable energy transition necessary? And the follow-up question then would be, does the Caribbean have the capacity to make this transition by that 2030 mark that we're all looking forward to?
No, really, really good question. So if we take it up on a level, right, when we think about climate change and what we can actually do and who's impacted and all of that, you separate it into a few different things. So on one side, you have mitigation, meaning how do we actually reduce the carbon emissions, impacts, especially from the Global North. And then from the adaptation perspective, it's all the countries and communities that are being impacted by climate change. How do they, you know, become more resilient and protect themselves and their cultures and their homes that, you know, they've lived in for generations. So on the mitigation side is where the energy transition comes in very strongly. It's instead of using fossil fuels and diesel and petrol in our cars and buses and tractors, how do we use clean, you know, very good renewable energy? So mitigation is a big topic in Global North because naturally they are the big emitters. And so they're really focusing on, okay, how can we kind of separate economic growth and emissions? So you're trying to decouple that, and that's a big challenge. So renewable energy is the big story. Now, when we look at the Caribbean, it tends to be adaptation that's top of mind. Like, you know, we're being inundated, sea level rise, drought, all of these things. So we're always focusing on, okay, how do we, how do we protect ourselves and our economies and livelihood? But renewable energy in the Caribbean actually presents a good crossover between mitigation and adaptation, because we are protecting ourselves by looking at renewable energy, because we're not then depending on neighbors. So for example, in Belize, you know, we depend on Mexico, we depend on everyone else to provide us energy, whereas renewable energy in our own country and region will mean that we have energy security. So it's a really interesting topic where mitigation and adaptation cross over, and it is something that we should be pursuing very strongly.
Right. And, you know, I think about every time I talk about renewable energy, I think about Guyana immediately and this huge amount of fossil fuel that they would have discovered and continue to discover in their area. Mm-hmm. How do you make this compromise between economic growth and switching over? Because we see, okay, of course, a lot of countries have made their economic rebound and their economic history has been based on extraction. Why shouldn't we get our turn at doing that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the politics of it now, the energy transition. And I think that's where COP28 and you know, the future cups will be really important in terms of if there's no additional support and financing coming in, then exactly like you've said, why shouldn't we have our chance at economic growth? So I think there's two limiting factors there, right? If you look strictly at the economics and the business behind fossil fuel extraction, there are certain risks ingrained in that. In terms of if we do transition and we reduce global demand for oil, then all this investment in fossil assets in Guyana will become stranded. So they've invested all of this time, resources to build this industry that will potentially die in the next 20 years. So just in terms of classic risk management, there's a bit of an issue there. And yeah, the second thing is, we are, as Global South, demanding a lot more from Global North. And this story sounds a bit old, but to be honest, everyone's just still getting used to this story. People are only just accepting the science. So it will take a lot of lobbying and negotiations and, you know, the politics behind it. So that's what we should be demanding on that end.
And I'm moving forward to COP28. Last year's big thing was loss and damage. This year we closed the second phase of the global stocktake. Where are we with that? I mean, globally, from your experience, and of course applying where Bana grew in the Caribbean, in Latin America and the Caribbean, where do we fall in all of that in terms of this adaptation and mitigation in relation to this energy that also spurs our urbanization space? I know back home constantly, for varying reasons, I hear it's because of the heat that we're having. I hear because Mexico is pulling back some of its energy. We constantly have power outages. Where do we fit in all of this as people who have, as countries who have agency? Do we have any agency when moving forward with what is happening in climate change and of course climate justice?
In terms of our negotiating power or in terms of just our own energy security?
I think a bit of both.
Yeah, I think the energy transition in the Caribbean context, it's just a shame because we have all the natural resources, right? Solar, wind, that we should be leveraging. But in terms of proper energy transition, you need flexibility. So battery storage, the sun doesn't always shine, the wind doesn't always blow, even in our context. So we need to think seriously about how we have the incentives for, you know, customers to buy and pay clean energy, how our utilities are procuring or building out their renewable energy assets. So there's a lot of thought and policy that needs to go into that. And we need to be solid on the benefits that we gain as a, you know, nation from that energy independence through renewables. In terms of our bargaining power out there, I think the fossil fuel, in terms of the global stocktake angle we should be taking, they're strong. The new Shell CEO came in and said, you know, we're putting energy transition in the back burner, if that, and we're pumping oil. So that's a completely different message than what they were saying pre the CEO. So I think we have a big battle, and I'm not sure, to be completely honest, how strong our lobby is at the moment. So it's a critical time that we bond together with stronger allies, especially in the global north, who can help to advocate on our behalf.
For sure. I think you mentioned earlier during the interview that this is an old story. And I of course know that you were referring to, you know, people, the science has always been there. We have always known of this challenge. But when I heard that, I thought about, oh, this is an old story of the core and the current countries at the core and countries at the periphery, and all this extraction happening, and us taking, of course, the creek with no paddle. Essentially.
And it's not a pretty creek.
It's not a pretty creek at all. When it comes to just our negotiating space, I know the Bridgetown Initiative, and this, I guess, where your climate finance experience comes in. The Bridgetown Initiative has been buzzing a lot. Everyone mentions it. I heard it at the CDB AGM. I hear it, well, as a recent graduate of the UA, as someone who will graduate from the UA very soon, we spoke about it a lot during classes, about, you know, when we talk about international relations and international political economy. Do you think, I mean, do you know much about the Bridgetown Initiative? And as an appendage to that, does that give us some sort of leverage as we move into this COP28 that is a global stocktake COP28?
I have to say, I haven't delved into that as yet. So if you enlighten us, then it would be a good learning as well.
Of course. So the Bridgetown Initiative focuses a lot on climate finance and how we access it. So one of the huge pillars, and it has several, but one of the ones that they're leaning a lot on is making sure that countries who are most vulnerable, when we access finance from anybody for anything, especially when it comes to infrastructure or when it comes to socioeconomic well-being, that there is some clause that speaks to climate vulnerability, because if a hurricane strikes and we have to pay these loans back, we have to choose between, we have to recover, or we have to continue paying the loan. So in some of the clauses, in some of the insurance spaces, what they're doing is that, okay, if a natural disaster strikes, whatever disaster strikes, you can get a pause on paying your loan. So that's one of the aspects of the Bridgetown Initiative. It's quite large. It was one of those things that started in Barbados, and Prime Minister Mia Mottley has been a huge voice for us in the region. Of course, standing on the shoulders of people who have been doing this for a very long time. That's a bit about the Bridgetown Initiative. I probably should put a bit of appendage on that, explain it more, you know, comprehensively. But the Bridgetown Initiative, I think, is something we should be proud of coming from us. We were the first people to imagine that, and then of course our partners began to jump on. So that's a bit about the Bridgetown Initiative and what.
Just listening to you as well, like, it just shows, I think climate is one of these wicked problems where we try to put a box around it and solve it and think about it, but it really is just interconnected into colonial history, economics of you know, our whole region and the globe. And this is one of the ways that it shows itself. So, you know, how does the debt burden of a country more broadly, whether it's projects that have nothing to do with climate or it does, how climate is now impacting, you know, how we have to think or tackle that. So yeah, I know, I think it's really important, and obviously people in the region are looking at the challenges and coming up with innovative ways. So in true Caribbean spirit, really pioneering innovation.
Always with the creativity.
Yep.
And you know, I see sometimes, like, I drew the comparison earlier in the first part of this renewable energy series about, you know, as I walk through the streets of London in March, like every corner has somewhere where I could charge my electric vehicle. In Belize, very, very different. In fact, I traveled from Belmopan to Belize City yesterday, and I saw one at one of the call center parking lots. And then I know for a fact there's one at the BL office in Belize City.
Yes.
So, like, it's very few and far in between for us. And I know Barbados, for example, was having a bit of a challenge with storage of energy, because Barbados, everyone has a solar panel on their house for water heating. And then I think there was an opportunity for people to put solar panels on their houses and sell this energy to the grid. But there was a problem with storing it. Like, we didn't have the capacity to store the amount of energy that we needed, and there was an overload. The story is
on the grid.
Yeah. So I know that we have those little economic challenges and capacity challenges in terms of just storing our energy.
But Dominique, that's not just a Caribbean problem. That's like a global especially even in the UK, people are waiting to connect their renewable assets to the grid, but the grid just wasn't built for that. So you need a whole overhaul of the entire grid system of the UK globally to be able to deal with this new energy system. So it's a systemic wicked problem that really needs a lot of playing parts. And as much as we try to box it and figure it out, the challenges and blockers are so widespread and at the economy level. So that's why, like I said, we needed to be doing this from, 20 years ago when the science came out, as opposed to scrambling now ahead of 2030. But we gotta do what we gotta do.
Work at as long as we actually do the work, because I don't want we just to talk and don't do it. But I think as we barrel to the end of the conversation, for you, what are some of the points of light, especially someone who has worked in multiple contexts at multiple levels? What are some of the points of light that we can look to for inspiration that you've seen in your work, if you have any of those?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like people, so at the moment, I focus more on the corporate level as opposed to public or civil society where I previously worked. And it's really interesting. Everyone's trying to grapple with it. People are really, the conversation around it is not about, setting targets anymore. It's about, okay, how do we deliver on the targets that we've set? So I see progress. I understand. Like I said, it's even though it's a system level change, even at the corporate level, it's a big change. But people are making moves and progress, and we just need to accelerate it. We need to find those little levers in the system where when you push it, then create a domino effect. And so if all the young people out there who are demanding more from their employers and from their governments, I think we'll get there. It might be a bit painful if we don't move quick enough, but we'll get there.
I love your optimism. And I don't want to sound like I'm optimistic. I'm always very weary, but hopeful. I'm always hopeful. That's where it starts. And I see young people doing great work. During the ECOSOC process, for the youth forum for ECOSOC, I would have met some great young people like Khadija Duncan from Belize, and there was another young lady from Trinidad and Tobago. I can't remember her name right now, but all these young people working in the energy sector who are saying, hey, this is something that can be done. And I am ready to support any expert and professional that says, hey, we can get to this renewable energy goal. We may get there kicking and screaming, and we may have to build some very, very tough allies. Partnerships, but it can be done if we do it together. And that sounds very kumbaya-ish, but it's how we've always solved problems, right? Doing it together and sharing solidarity and being empathetic to other people's challenges, because of course Global North challenges aren't the same as Global South
Global South, yeah.
challenges, and there are some parallels and there are some spaces that we meet, but it's just not the same. So it takes some understanding, takes some taking responsibility. But we'll get there. Do you
Yep.
have
And I,
any
sorry,
final
go
words?
ahead.
No, do you have any final words
Yeah,
for
no. Yeah, that was my final word. Like, as much as we can get into the technicality and the politics and the economics of it, I think we just have to remember who we're trying to serve. We're trying to ensure that the local communities and, our people who have built their lives and happiness and, livelihoods around our natural resources can continue doing so. So when we think about the transition, we always have to keep them at the heart and how they will be impacted and how we, support the just transition, as we call it.
Yes, for sure, for sure. Okay, so thank you very much for taking out time from your afternoon to join us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dominique. Lovely to catch up.
Of course. All right. Bye-bye.
Until next time, we encourage you to read a bit more, lean into community, and engage in communal learning. And of course, we hope that we were able to spur your curiosity just enough to spin you into action and make a difference in both big and small ways. Until next time, thanks for joining us here at Walasaha for In Betweenity, the Green Pod, made possible through the generous partnership with the Clara Lionel Foundation. Bye.
justice we need.